On May 9th, 1926, a man named Richard Byrd announced to the world that he and his co-pilot were the first to fly over the North Pole. Now, there is some controversy about whether or not that actually happened as reported, but that's what was announced. And this flight then led to some on-the-ground expeditions by Richard and others on the North Pole, in Greenland, and other areas. And so later on, in the 1990s, someone found his journal. And so, you know, the journal contained what you might think it would contain, reports of their expeditions. It also was what he used to communicate with his co-pilot during their flight, because they couldn't hear each other, so they would write notes to each other. And there's the back and forth of just navigating. But he also reflected on his time mostly alone in barren Arctic lands. And in his journal is this statement: "I am learning that a person can live profoundly without masses of things." Took him weeks and months alone in barren lands to discover this truth that many of us feel at times but don't live out. We've been talking about spiritual disciplines. We started off talking about ones we know about, like prayer, and ones we know about but might not practice often, like fasting. We're going to talk about Bible reading later on, but today I want to talk about the discipline of simplicity. It's a discipline that is mentioned in most works that cover spiritual practices, but it's one we might not think about as quickly when we think about practices. It might not be as quickly as we think about prayer and fasting and Bible reading, but I want to talk about simplicity today with us. We can really first see this concept showing up in Scripture back in the Old Testament, when Moses has led God's people, the Israelites, out of Egyptian captivity. And they're wandering for 40 years. Should have taken them much shorter, but they're wandering around. And, well, the food's just not quite the same on this journey. And you read about them saying things like, you know, we didn't really like being in captivity in Egypt, but at least there was meat to eat there. And out here, there's just nothing. And so Moses goes to God in prayer, and he says, look, the people are grumbling, and I'm the one who gets all the criticism. Could we do something about this? They don't have the food that they want. And God says, okay, we can do something about that. There will be in the evenings quail all around the ground, and they can gather their meat there. And then in the mornings, after the dew has dried, I will provide bread for them to eat. And so the Israelites adopt this new practice. They see all these flakes on the ground. They call it manna. It's mana. It just means, what is it? That's what they call it. But in the midst of all these commands about how they should eat and how much they should eat, God makes this statement: everyone is to gather as much as they need. Now, that's not as much as they want. That's not all you can eat manna buffet. That is as much as they need and no more. And God is saying, I will provide for them everything that they need. And they don't need to hoard it up or store more or get some extra because there's not enough to go around. Take what you need and no more. So we see this back in the Old Testament. But as we've done each week, we're trying to root our practices mainly in the life and teachings of Jesus. So what does Jesus say about simplicity? Well, he talks about this in the Sermon on the Mount. He teaches, do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth. Jesus is reminding his listeners that God will provide what they need, and they don't need to be acquiring and taking and hoarding and getting more than they need. And Jesus really has two things that undergird this teaching. One is the theological principle: don't rely on other things for your security instead of God. But there's a practical thing too. He says, don't store up these things on earth where moth and rust destroy. These things that you get and you keep are not going to last. They are perishable. Why would you put your faith in things that don't last? And so Jesus says, don't store up treasures on earth. Store up treasures in heaven. And then he goes on to teach about God's provision for all of us. In this passage in Matthew chapter 6, as he continues, he says, therefore I tell you, don't worry about your life, what you will eat or drink, or about your body, what you will wear? Is not life more than food and the body more than clothes? And to illustrate this, Jesus gives some very fascinating imagery. He's getting on to them about worrying about all the complexities of eating and drinking, and he has these images of a tiny sparrow pushing this huge plow hard enough to create a deep furrow. And then the birds going and gathering all the harvest and storing it up in barns. The birds don't do that, and God takes care of them. What about these flowers, these lilies of the field? They're beautiful, but they're not out there spinning yarn and making their clothes. And yet, they look better than King Solomon. So if God will take care of the birds, and God will take care of the lilies and the flowers in the field, don't you think, human being, that God will take care of you? And you don't have to do all these things and worry and acquire and get and fret about things. God will take care of you because he takes care of these other things. And to finish out this teaching, Jesus says, seek first God's kingdom and his righteousness, and all these other things will be given to you as well. Keep your focus first on God's kingdom and righteousness, and all this other stuff that you worry about and try to get will be given to you as well. He didn't only teach this, though, he practiced it. So one time, Jesus is trying to escape from the crowds. He does do a lot of ministry, but he needs to get away. So he's trying to go to the other side of the body of water, and one of the teachers of the law says to Jesus, hey, I'll follow you wherever you go. I don't know if that's a good thing or kind of creepy. I don't know the context for this. But Jesus says in response, foxes have dens and birds have nests, but the Son of Man has no place to lay his head. So here's Jesus, the Son of God, the Messiah, who does not have a home. Jesus doesn't have lots of things. He doesn't even have a simple home to go back to. Now, Jesus is not overall opposed to having things or even having wealth. Luke tells us that there was a group of wealthy women who were essentially bankrolling the ministry of Jesus and his disciples. So Jesus is not doing this to say, and therefore none of my followers should have homes. But we do see from Jesus a shunning of all kinds of things that a normal person might want to have. Jesus practiced simplicity. And the line keeps going. Paul, the apostle, writing from house arrest to the church in Philippi, tells them this: I've learned to be content whatever the circumstances. I know what it is to be in need, and I know what it is to have plenty. I've learned the secret of being content in any and every situation, whether well-fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want. I can do all this through him who gives me strength. Okay, we need to talk about this last verse. I can do all this through him who gives me strength. What we don't do is pull that off, make it all things, and stick it on our soccer balls and boxing gloves and marathon jerseys and all those things. It's not what this is about. Paul says, I can do all this. That's a better translation. What's the all this? He's told us. Being in need or having plenty. Being well-fed or hungry. Living in plenty or in need. That's what Paul can do. That's the all this. Paul can be content in all of these situations. But Paul, the apostle, is content with a life of simplicity when that is what is given to him. So let's name the elephant in the room talking about simplicity, because several of you have told me when you saw the schedule of what topics we're going to cover, you've said something like this: oh, you're going to talk about simplicity at Preston Road. I can't wait to hear about this. I think we're self-aware, right? We're self-aware. We know our situation. We know some of the unique things that come along with that. We know that there is an above average amount of wealth in this room. Can we just be honest about that? But it's not just the wealthy who have struggles with simplicity. Have you ever seen the TV show Hoarders? So we know that wealth and social status do present some additional challenges. In fact, many of you have told this to me when we've talked one-on-one. You feel a deep burden to use what you've been given in a way that honors God. And I'm so grateful when I hear those conversations. I don't have to tell you about the challenges that come with wealth and status. You know it, and you think about it often. But all of us know when we've accumulated wealth or status, and even if we haven't, all these things that we can have access to that are supposed to make our lives simpler don't. There were all these predictions with the emergence of the home computer about how much less we'd have to work. And oh, email will definitely make things simpler. Have you found that to be true? I think we're working more and more. Our lives are more complex than ever, even with these tools. They have not been the healing element that we thought they would be. We are in a situation, though, where we want more and more. We get more and more, and it pays off less and less. So what if we just focused our talk on simplicity on two things? It's the two things that might come to mind for you. Talking about simplifying our spending and simplifying our schedules. If we think about spending, I want to be clear, because I've read all the stuff on simplicity. No one thinks that simplicity means living an austere life of poverty. Simplicity can happen at any level of society. This is not a call for all of us to take a vow of poverty. But we do know what happens when spending gets out of control. Richard Foster says that the lust for affluence in our contemporary society is psychotic. And we know what it's like to try to, we want the car like the neighbors have, and we want the home like the coworker has, and we want to take the vacations like our other family members do. We want more and more, and it just gets more complex. And in the end, we end up buying things that we don't need with money that we don't have to impress people that we don't like. You know, the average home now is over 50% larger than it was in 1970, and yet the self-storage industry is booming. We have a lot more space in our homes, but we still need more space to put all of our stuff that we buy. And so for some of us, we were a little too impressed with gadgetry. Like, this is me, okay? This new thing with this cool feature, that this other thing that you already have doesn't do quite as well, you should get that. So let me get this and acquire more and more. Name your thing. We all have things we like to acquire and that are temptations for us as we get more and more. It's not about the amount of money or the amount of square footage. I think all of us could do with auditing our spending a little bit. It's not so much that, you know, we're spending money that we shouldn't be spending. It's just that we're getting things that we don't need. How many times do we go through our homes and say, why do I have all this stuff? I should get rid of it. Well, here this is a call to get rid of it. It's just clutter. And the clutter around us clutters our mind. It's too complex. But we might do well to simplify our spending a little bit. But I think just as, if not more important, is a call for us to simplify our schedules. See, money we can get more and more of. But time, I don't care who you are, you've got the same amount of time as I do. And some of us probably need to remember that every time we say yes to a commitment, we are saying no to something else. There's always something we could do with our time. And so when we say yes and yes and yes and fill up our calendars, we are saying no to other things. And that's okay. Sometimes we need to say a yes, even when it's not what we planned on. But how many of us are saying yes to things that just make our lives more complex and don't draw us closer to God? If you think for a moment about what gets your quickest and most enthusiastic yes for your schedule, and think for a moment whether that aligns with seeking first God's kingdom. And I know the tension, because if we spend our time paying attention to the demands of work, we feel guilty because, well, it just seems like I'm neglecting family matters. And then if I pay attention to my family, well, I feel guilty because there's all this work stuff piling up. So this is not a call to feel guilty about that. I know many of your schedules are just difficult, and you feel like you can't do much about it, and often you can't, and I know that's hard. But when we look at our schedules, I bet they're more cluttered than they need to be, and it is okay. I know it feels weird. It's okay to look at your calendar and not see anything. I've got an evening free. I should fill it up. No, you don't have to. You don't. Sometimes it's okay to have unstructured time that doesn't have a name on it. You are not being lazy when you do that. You are simplifying your life. Now, let me just say a word here on this matter to parents of young children, okay? I want you to pay attention to me. I know you've got kids around you, and it might be hard. But take it from parents who've been down the road a little further than you and who've done things well and have done things not very well. Simplify your family's schedule. Your kids do not need to be in all the things you're putting them in. I know it's hard, and you want the best for them. But when all of your evenings are spent driving around and every weekend or every other weekend you're out of town at something, I don't think it's going to do for you or your kids what you think it will. So it is okay to tell your kids, we're going to do one thing at a time. And so sometimes I'll talk to parents and they'll say, I just feel like I'm just driving kids around all the time. I don't like it. I'm like, you get to set your family schedule. It is okay. Your preacher is telling you. You can simplify and say, we're doing this thing, but then we're going to make sure we have some laid back family time. They don't need to be in something all the time that's just killing your schedule. It is okay to simplify your family's schedule. Why do we do all this? What does it mean to simplify our spending and our schedule? We do this because simplicity will create margins for ministry. Jesus was able to stop and serve people because he didn't have a 2:30. And I know the pressure. In my early months here, my calendar was full. I was trying to do meet and greets and spend time with people, and I still want to do that. What I found is that I was scheduling so many weeks out that when an immediate need came up, I didn't have time for people. I was telling people, it's going to be 3 weeks. Felt like some artificial self-importance, you know? Well, I can't see you for that's ridiculous. I'm not that important. I didn't make time for needs that would show up. It was all on my time, my schedule, and then something would show up and it'd be too long. But this isn't just a call for me as your minister. One of our core values here is that every member is a minister. And so you're called to serve people as well. And how easy or hard is it to do that when your schedule is packed and something comes up and it's very difficult to respond? We simplify ourselves because then we have time for the things that don't show up on our terms. Because life doesn't always happen on our terms, but it lets us be responsive to what shows up. I have attended many funerals in my lifetime. And do you know the sweetest moment of funerals for me is if there are grandkids who were old enough to be on stage and talk. Do you know what they talk about? They don't talk about this one lavish thing that their grandparents bought them. They don't talk about busy schedules that their grandparents kept. They will say simple things like, you know, when I went to their house, there was always a Coke waiting for me on the counter, and we played board games. It's very simple things. That's what these grandkids remember. Simple times that were not in a hurry, not lavish amounts of money. Simplicity. I wonder if that's how people would talk about us. You know, they always had time for me. Oh, they always had my favorite drink available when I went to see them. It was just easy. Didn't have to wait 3 weeks to see them. I was the most important thing in the room, and they weren't worried about all the stuff that they needed to manage and all of the things on their schedule. It was just simple. A few days ago, I went to see a good friend and mentor of mine named Bailey McBride. Some of you might know that name. He was at Oklahoma Christian for a long time, edited the Christian Chronicle. He turned 90 last year. And after having lived in the Oklahoma City area since the 1960s, he is now moving to Nashville, Tennessee, because he's got another grown child there, and there's a facility there that will better care for his needs. Bailey is, and I'll tell you this story sometime, Bailey's the reason I got back into ministry in 2008 after thinking, I'm never doing that again. So Bailey has been dear to me for a long time. So I went and visited him, and I asked him, I said, Bailey, how are you feeling about moving to Nashville? Are you excited? Are you frustrated? And he answered by telling me the story of how he met his wife Joyce and how they got married and lived in Albuquerque for a year before moving to Edmond, and the birth of his kids and how his family began. And I thought, well, that's not really an answer to my question, but okay. So we moved on, and then I asked him again toward the end of the conversation. So, you know, Bailey, on a scale of like, I'm really frustrated and kind of resentful to, I'm very excited, where are you on this move? And he answered by telling me the story of his wife Joyce's passing several years ago, and then surprise to find new love late in life, and the wife that he married, and then her tragic death just a year or two ago. Still didn't answer the question. And so I said, all right, Bailey, I've asked you twice how excited you are to move and if you're okay with that, and you've just told me the story of your family and your life. Is that your way of telling me I've had a wonderful life with people I love and I'm going to be content with what's next? And he said, that sounds about right. He had learned to be content whatever the circumstances, and I learned from that conversation a lot about what it is to be content. So when we live a life of simplicity, focused on the right things and the right people, with the ability to minister to those around us, then near the end, we, like Bailey, can say, I'm content. So brothers and sisters, seek first the kingdom of God. Everything else is secondary. Let's stand and sing.